보여요. All right. So the schiltis, as we said, right, this vegetable that we've been talking about, cut with the trefa knife. So we want to make sure that this hasn't happened. We want to make sure that it's kosher schiltis, right? Or murias, remember that's the fish business, right? Or pas, bread, and givina, cheese, right? So mutorin b'chosim echad. They require only one seal on them to testify to the fact that they are kosher. Okay? So now, the question is raised. Pas, labai nechishlo, a piece of bread, why should we be suspicious of it? Imishum ichlufe, is it because you're afraid that the goy is going to substitute his own piece of bread for your Jewish bread? Is that what you're afraid of? Kirira v'chamim of medan. If, for example, a piece of bread is cold and he substitutes it for a warm piece of bread, people know, medo yedia, right? And how about dechitei b'desa'are? Or is this piece of bread, is it made out of wheat or is it made out of barley? Nami medo yedia. People know, they can tell the difference. So why does it have to have a seal? So he says, Iki hadre, we gave him the Iko chosem echod, lo torach u'mezayin. He says, inasmuch as people can figure out what's going on, and he gets nothing really out of substituting his for the Jewish bread, right? So he's not going to go to the effort of trying to make a false seal, a counterfeit seal. It's not going to bother. It's not that, it's not that expensive. And therefore, he won't go to that length.
What seal would they put on bread?
Obviously, they would put something, we have that, you can wrap things around and so on, but they didn't have wrapping in those days. But maybe they made a mark of some sort, I don't know.
You know that right.
I know when it came to wine.
Remember the pastor's bread?
Of course I remember pastor's bread.
They used to carry a seal. There was a little paper thing to stuck on them.
What I remember on the pastor's bread is that this was the union made.
It was a blue seal or something.
The union.
It was a union.
There is a reason
it's
for a seal.
It's wrapped with paper and it has
a seal.
But these breads
were
never
wrapped. It's sealed on wine. Right.
Okay. With wine, the way it comes today, we know. Yeah. Let's say if there's a cork or if there's even a top, but you know, first of all, there's that piece of paper, whatever it is, you know, that they have over there.
Foil.
And then the foil, whatever. And then on top of it, you know, then comes it. So it has a double seal, even to this day. And make sure that it's kosher. Right.
On the wine,
right.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
The reason was that they had to taste the wine before and make sure it was a certain quality, and then they put the seal on. When they put the seal on, they knew it was a certain quality.
Well, it's not just a question of the quality. It wasn't just a question of quality. The question is for the kosher consumer that he wants to know that the wine is not Yain Nesach, that's all.
We're talking about
it's not even Stam Yain. Now that we learned quite some time ago, different categories, that Yein Nesach means that definitely the idolater used it in order to form libations. But then we had what we called Stam Yeinim. In other words, wine which is made by Goyim. Okay?
I'm talking about
right.
Times of
Western. So, we don't use that either.
Right. There was such a thing as a double seal.
Yeah. Obviously, they had some method, of sealing things. There's no question about it. Right.
Yeah.
Remember I told you...
Right.
It was required. Remember I told you the story about the murias that they found in Pompeii?
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously it was sealed, and said a lot, you know, that this is kosher.
The bread in the old days that we were taught about,
right,
can unwrap. This is amazing.
Yes.
It will unwrap, just like bakery bread.
But you went into a bakery and you got it, right?
Yeah.
And even the Jewish bakeries, whether it's Pachter's or Messing or something like that, you know. Right. Okay. So that's what the bread
is.
Right.
So, why is it so unusual to buy bread, you know, just without wrapping? I mean, you go into a Makola in Israel, they'd always have it.
Yeah, correct, because you're going into a Jewish store. And you know that it comes from Angel's Bakery, let's say, and Angel's is strictly kosher.
You know,
yeah,
I experienced that in Israel on that bread.
Right.
But in America, the only place that you get on that bread is from a certified kosher bakery.
Well, I buy it on that bread at what's her name? Diana.
Diana, but that's because it has a Hersher on it, that's
right.
You don't
want to
carry it out
without. You're not going to carry it out the door.
No, I mean, what we understand is, I mean, the bread itself is not wrapped to begin with. That's all.
But that's like buying a kosher bakery.
Right.
It is a kosher bakery.
Right. But you wouldn't pick it up in a supermarket.
Okay. What kind of bread do we call it?
Oh, wait.
Remembers the term.
No, it's not Pot Israel. It's Pot
Israel.
No, it's not Pot Israel. It's please. We're not good students, are we? We know. It's on the third times here.
It's going to be on the next test.
Palter.
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 Right. Of course, Pas-Akum, I don't have to tell you, this would be strictly off balance, okay.
Pas-Akum.
Akum, an idolater. An idolater's bread, okay. But the bread that we have is not made by idolaters. It's made, you know, by goyim, let's say. That's Pas-Palter. Okay. All right. To continue.
Yes.
We're a little bit longer over here, and then we'll call it a night. Right. All right. So the question is, what is it? So they say, okay, look. It should have a seal, but the goy is not going to go to the trouble of trying to produce a counterfeit seal on it. Okay. So now the next item over there was the cholov, the milk, right? Nominally Torah and Zayif. But where was cholov in the abbreviations?
It was with
chavis, remember?
Yeah.
And therefore, there we said that it has to have a double seal. Right.
Actually, some of the milk says when you pick up those plastic things.
But now we'll see that maybe we don't have to worry about a double seal. Maybe a single seal would be enough as far as milk is concerned. Why? Because we say cholov dame, right? Milk also, lo torach umezayif. The goy isn't going to go and manufacture a fake seal over it. Okay.
The profit level is very low.
Right. Yeah. So Amar Rav Kana, as Rav Kana said, that being the case, he says, apik cholov, right? Take out milk from the list that we said requires a double seal, right? But instead, ba'ayol, and include for the ches, we need a ches, right?
Okay.
So what is the ches? Chasichas dog she'ein bo simen. A slice of fish which does not have any sign that we know that it is kosher. Okay?
Well, maybe kosher fish, but you can cut with an unkosher knife.
That in itself, maybe yes, maybe not.
A
fish fillet.
More that were, let's say, the scales were taken off.
Or like a fillet.
Or a fillet, or something like that, exactly. A fillet.
You wouldn't be able to.
Where don't have the original scales on it, you understand?
But if it was cut with an unkosher knife, I don't care whether that scales and fins.
All right. But nevertheless.
Don't make any difference.
needless to say, what we want to have is fish that we know is kosher to begin with, okay? But when you have a fillet, do you know what you're getting in the fillet?
Especially they sell them with skin removed.
Right.
We don't know what's
under. Exactly. This is the problem. Right. We don't know. We have to rely on the, you know, the person who's selling it to you, that he's selling you something kosher or not. This is why they say it should have a double seal. Right? It should have a double seal. So they say, I knew boss it.
Why,
so,
why more than one seal here?
Huh?
Why the more than one seal here?
Why more than
double seal?
To make sure that it's really a kosher piece of fish.
Why only one seal?
Why only one seal? Yeah, okay. The answer is that maybe one seal, the goy might be able to, you know, to counterfeit something, to forge something. But with two, he's not going to go to all that effort in order to sell it. This is the idea.
Right. Doctor, why,
yes.
Just a few sentences above,
right.
They're saying, look, we're not going to worry about whether a slice of bread is made out of barley or wheat or tatar.
No, because they say because people can recognize the difference.
All right. The wine,
so what is the goy trying to substitute? This is what the question is.
Okay.
What is he trying to substitute?
My question is, why is this not analogous? I mean, even today when we go to buy fish, you know, we're certainly not fishermen, we can look at fish without skins or scales and know that's scrod, that's flounder, that's bluefish, that's trout. Why is this such a big problem? Why are
it's a big problem for the uninitiated. Maybe you know the difference between one. If I go into a fish market, I'll be very honest, I don't know whether it's this fish or that fish or the other fish. I have to rely upon the seller.
Right. There was a lot of the fish that they couldn't even.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. I mean, we had the names of fish. We had the names of fish that we never heard of in our life, you know. We don't know what to compare it to. Right. Right.
No, that, I mean, that does make sense. Sure, they're new fish in a new region.
Yeah, you take the labels.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, how would you know?
Catfish
is trafe.
What is it? It doesn't have what?
Yeah, but it just
I assume it doesn't have scales. I assume.
They do?
Like big Y or
stuff. Oh, yeah.
It's a southern
delicacy. Oh, yes, right. There's no question about it, right.
No scales?
Then you'll have some other salmon without them.
Right.
I would assume it's just because of the knife.
It could be because of the knife. Well, that's a possibility. I would say no.
Or tuna. The tuna is right. Sideways. Right. What could be trade for the tuna
right.
Separated in that year where they're cutting back.
Right. Or to make sure, you know, that you're getting the genuine product and not, you know, something that they call by the same name.
You buy salmon steaks, right. They're all pre-cut if you want to come to the store.
True. But when we buy salmon steaks, we buy salmon steaks which have a hefshir on it. For a while, we were able to get it when Yitzchak was there. We would order it. So they told us in the big Y over there that if we want those salmon steaks, so we can put in an order and they'll bring us, a case or something, a dozen FA, something like that, of the salmon steak that has the OU on it. Or Kafke or whatever it has, you know, a reliable hefshir on it.
You can always, a lot of people just buy the whole thing.
Yeah, true. I mean, with that, there's no question. I mean, if you have a whole fish, then it's easy to spot what it is. Right. But as we see, the problem is, you know, where there's no way to identify exactly, or you don't know how to identify it. All right, I'll stop in another moment.
You don't
right.
have to worry about milk, but you do have to worry
right.
about fish.
Okay, let's just do four more words. So they ask the question, I knew Bosser. So it says, well, if that's the case, this is the same rule that we have as far as meat is concerned, where we already said you have to have a double seal on it, right? So they say, yet takazai trei gavnei bosar, right? Yes, it is true, he says, that there are two different types of meat. One is the meat that is the meat of an animal, and the other one is the meat of a fish. But in either case, the same principle should apply to both of them.
Right. Buster, if it's a cutthroat fish, too?
No.
This is what he's saying, right? It's using the word buster. The flesh, all right. Let's say. Flesh, right. The flesh of an animal and the flesh of a fish. All right, so we'll stop at this particular point.
Doctor, it's
very welcome. Okay. Tonight we continue on the 18th of January in the year 2006. And we're continuing in the Gemara Vedazora, Daf Lamed Tes, Amud Beis. At this particular point, it's good to recall again what we had at the bottom of the previous side of Lamed Tes, Amud Aleph. Okay? We had at that particular point some mnemonic device as to what requires a double seal and what requires a single seal. Okay? If we take a look again at the last line of Lamed Tes, Amud Aleph, okay, it says, Omar Rav, Rav said that Chavis Osir B'chosin Echad, and Chamfag is Muta B'chosin Echad. And of course, each the mnemonic device over here that we have is to represent a group of different types of food. Okay? So what was the Chavis where Rav said that it requires a double seal? So we saw that it includes cholov, milk, right? Bosor is meat, of course. Yayin is wine. And then techeles, the as we said, this is the dye that was used in order to dye tzitzis in conformity with what we read, you know, that seal techeles you have to have in the tzitzis itself, okay? And we saw that they wanted to make sure, you know, that it was real, genuine techeles. You know, it came from the chilazon, in other words. It was not simply a purple dye or a blue dye or something like that, which, you know, was not the genuine article. Okay, so these required double seals. And then, on the top of the page that we're now learning, that we learned last week, right, we saw that there was a discussion about, first of all, the ches. The ches, we said, was cholov, that you have to have milk. But then there was a question whether really the milk required a double seal or not. And so, if we take out the ches, okay, and we change it to something else, so what did it come out as? So it became as chasichas bosar, okay? In other words, they said it means a slice of meat. Go into the market, you get a slice of meat. It's kosher meat. How should it be wrapped? In a double seal, okay? This is what they said. So then, that's why they asked the question, but we already had the word bosar also, remember? Cholov, ches, beis, right? So that is already bosar. So what do you do with that? So the answer that was given is that also in the case of fish, to be sure that you have a slice of kosher fish and not treifa fish, it should also be double wrapped. And the last thing that we heard is that therefore it shows that that the word bosar, you know, there are two types. The flesh of an animal and the flesh of fish. So this is where we stopped last time. And that was Rob's opinion. So we are now, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. 7, 8. Line 9, okay. Ushmuel Omer, he says, Beis Osir B'chosim Echad. He cut it down, he did not include the Ches, but instead, he says, let's take the other three. What are they? the base again is basar, meat has to be definitely right. In other words, he excluded the word chalav, the milk, because with milk it's a different story. Okay, we'll see tonight a little bit further on, but he included the meat, the wine, and the techeles. Okay, right, milk, the wine, and techeles on his count. That requires a double seal. Okay. on the other hand, he says, machag muta b'chosem echad. Okay. What is machag? So he explains. It says, bosor yayin techeles, right? His base is beet, wine, and the techeles. Asur b'chosem echad, right? They are prohibited with one seal. But Moria's, right, which we said, I mean, this was this fish. Right, the chopped fish. Chiltis, which we said, this was this plant that was so tough that, and also it had a very sharp flavor to it, you know, that's another thing. So it was so sharp, and it was so tough that in order to get the plant, what did they have to do? They had to use a knife, and presumably if a goy, you know, used his knife, he probably also used the same knife in order to cut meat or something like that, and so therefore it would be greasy and so on and so forth, and therefore that's why it requires, better supervision, but it only requires what? Only one seal. And finally, what is the gimel? The gimel stands for gavina, right? The cheese. Cheese also has to be kosher cheese, but only requires one seal, because as we learned last week, the presumption is that the goy is not going to try to substitute one cheese for another, I mean, or to try to put it into the cheese of a treif animal. You need something to make sure that you're having kosher cheese, but that doesn't require a double seal. One seal is enough. So, the next question that they ask, okay, Lishmuel, right, as far as Shmuel is concerned, he says, Chasichas dog, Shein bo simon, hainu bosa, right? It says, look, if you have a slice of fish, which you don't see that it has any scales on it, right? No simon of it. So he says, that's no different, he says, from meat itself, right? Because he holds what was said before, treig of the bosa, right? Because we say, we don't require the word bosor to be repeated twice. That's why he doesn't bother with the ches, right? But by bosor he includes both the meat of animals, right? And also the meat of a slice of fish. A slice of animal, a slice of fish. And they both require double seal to make sure that, you know, you're getting kosher. Okay. Okay, now we continue. We say that there's another baraisa that they have on Tosefta, which says, "Ein lochim yimach mechag b'suria." Okay, so the question is, what is yimach? Yimach is lo yayin, velo murias, velo cholav. Okay, in Syria he says, you know, there was a Jewish community in Syria. Anything that would be, let's say, north of Eretz Israel or to the east of Eretz Israel would be considered Syria, okay? And particularly to the north. So you don't purchase either wine or murias or milk, right? The low melach sal kunduris, and this is the kind of a salt that we said it very often they would mix, lard or something with it. So you don't purchase that either. Velo chiltis, nor the chiltis, you know, the vegetable that we were talking about with the sharp taste. Velo gavino, nor should you buy any cheese in Syria. Elo min hamuncha, except from somebody who is literally, mumcha normally means somebody who is an expert. But here, really, what it implies is who is certified that he is kosher. You understand? This is really what they're trying to imply. So, if you're in Syria, in other words, you're outside of Eretz Yisrael, you understand? So you have to be a little bit extra careful that when you buy any of these products that we mentioned before, you have to make sure that you're buying it in the Jewish store, exactly. Somebody who is certified, you know, that he's careful about these things. The chulon, and in all of these cases, im nisarach etzem al habayis mutar. If he happened, let's say, to be a guest, if a person happened to be a guest at the home of one of these people who is certified as what? As a mumcha, right? As a mumcha, in other words, he's certified that he's kosher, he sells kosher things. Then, in that particular case, so mutar, okay, then you are permitted to eat in his house, okay? And Messiah Leila Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and this particular teaching gives support to a teaching of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, the Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who said, Shogar lo bal habayis leveso mutar. What if one of these people, you know, who is certified as a mumcha storekeeper, he sends a gift to you? Can you accept it? I mean, of course, I'm talking about a gift of food, right? So he says, mutar, that it's okay. My tama. He says, what is the reason? So he says, because the habayis, this particular person who sent you the gift and who owns the store and so on, so it says lo shovik hetero the ochal isura. He's not going to refuse to eat kosher because he wants to eat something which is treif. Understand? In other words, he is certified that he's selling kosher. And obviously, then if he's certified, somebody must have certified him. So, in his own home, too, he is presumed what? That he's keeping a kosher home. Understand?
Right. Then he's going to give you.
Exactly. So, if it comes from his home, then you're permitted to take it because of the fact that he's not going to purposely eat treif when he has the ability to eat kosher. He had this business of lo shomek yisura many dapim ago too, right? In other contexts as well. That the idea being, at that time, the discussion was about the difference between a mumor l'teyavon, right, and a mumor l'hachis. I don't know if you remember that at all. Oh, this goes back months ago. Okay. And then Mumar L'Teyavon, we said, this person, he's not always observant. After all, he's a Mumar. A Mumar means, you know, that he is suspected he is not behaving right. Okay. But L'Teyavon means, when does he eat treif? He eats treif if he has nothing else to eat. But if he has a choice between eating something kosher and eating treif, he's not going to refuse to eat the kosher food because he wants to eat the treif food. So he's a mumar l'teyavon. It's not 100% in accordance with what it should be, but at least he has that feeling that he'll eat Jewish food rather than goyish food. Okay? Whereas the mumar l'hachis, what does l'hachis imply? he's doing it in order to spite. Right, of t'lachis, exactly. He wants to spite you. So we had that principle again initiated at that particular time. So this is why, based on this particular principle, so he says that, okay, if the Balabasa was certified that he sells kosher products, the chances are that he has a kosher home, and any product, that he's going to send to you is a gift. It's coming from his home, and it's kosher. Okay. Okay.
Well, no, it's
right.
The theory, too. The
right.
principle,
yeah.
That if you're kosher, you're going to be concerned about other people's kosher as well.
Right, right, absolutely.
The person who cares.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean,
about
presumably, if he is a mumcha, then he has to be somebody, who cares enough about selling kosher. It's not just a business with
right.
him. But it's a principle as well. Okay. Sure.
About the upwards as Bahotem Achad is Mem Chad Gimel. What is that still?
Okay. The Mem is Murias.
Oh, I see.
Right? And the Ches is Chalov, right?
And
Gavina, right.
Right. And
okay.
Then, can I ask you
sure.
also again, right where we are now, the Beto Mutar, then there's Mem. Mem Tat. What is that?
My Tama.
Oh, my Tama. Okay.
Yeah, what is the reason, right?
Thank you.
Right. What he's concluding in this particular sugya is that it's my Tama. What is the reason, that you can trust him? He says, because Bala Bias, the Shavik Hetera, right? Biochalasur, that's what we said. And therefore, the Chimishagir lays, so, and when he sends him a gift, the Maide Ochumishalay. He's sending him a gift of that which he himself eats, and since we say we assume 100%, that he eats kosher, and that. But obviously, if you have a storekeeper who is a suspect, then in that particular case, already that's already an undermiser, right? But we're talking about somebody who does not, he's not under a suspicion, okay? That he's honest in what he's doing. Okay. All right. So now, yes.
Says that the storekeeper is selling forbidden items to his fellow Jews.
If he does, in that case, you can't trust him.
His note here says that he is a storekeeper who is suspected of selling forbidden items to his fellow Jews. He is not suspected of eating those forbidden items himself. And when he takes the trouble to send a gift, he makes sure to send only such items as he would eat himself.
Yep.
So you've been under those conditions, you've been trusting that, right?
Right. I think we should take a look at the Rashi, see how Rashi explains it. Okay. Okay.
That's different than what we're
saying. Ein lo chim yimach b'chak, right? And let me say, of course, this applies in Syria, right? In other words, outside of Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, presumably everybody keeps kosher. Albeit were true today, but in those days it was probably true. Okay.
I'm sorry, what are we looking for?
The Rashi. Ein lo chin. On the side, you'll see Tosefta, that stands for, right? Ayin Shom, right?
Oh, I see. Okay.
Right. Okay, now the next line over there. Ein lochin yimach machag, etc. He says, Shechen vonim sheba Syria, right? The storekeepers in Syria, chashidei, they are suspect. The loikavdei alifnei yivele sitei mishel, that they're not punctilious about not observe, you shall not place a stumbling block before the blind. I mean, we've had this on various occasions. In other words, you don't get somebody into sin or something like that. So they're not that trustworthy. Okay. Umezabdei Yisrael, and therefore they don't hesitate to sell a Jew. Devarim shalokhu min hoved kechavim. Right. Things that they themselves, the storekeepers, purchased from the idolater. So Nihu, however, he says, Inhu gufaihu loyafli yasura. However, the storekeepers themselves are not eating forbidden foods. In other words, they're eating kosher. In their own home, they have kosher, right? So Hilchot, if that's the case, if the Sarach Etzlo, if a person, was a guest in their house, so Mutar Le'echol Imo, it's permitted to eat with him, because in their own homes, they keep kosher. This is the point.
A Jew running a trefir butcher job.
That's correct. But the question is also, will he sell trefir meat to a Jew? This is the problem. Yeah. Right. So that's why we have to have a mumcha, somebody who we know is certified that he sells kosher food and not trefir food. Okay? That he is careful about that. Okay. All right. So now the
mumcha is like a mashgiach or something.
Mumcha literally means an expert, but it also means somebody who has been, I say, approved, certified that he is a competent person, as far as character and ability and knowledge, etc., is concerned. Okay?
And he approves somebody else. And he is the one who approves the story.
He has been approved. I didn't say somebody. He's been approved, let's say, by the rabbinate or something like that. You understand?
Right. He's not the one that's not reliable, though.
No, but that's why he says you should buy
only from
a mumcha, right.
Wait, so in other words, there are two categories of storekeepers, if I can see if I can summarize this. One is the mumcha, who we don't worry about, because he's only selling kosher products, and of course if you eat in his home or he sends you a gift, it goes without saying that it's going to be kosher.
Correct.
And then there's the other storekeeper, who will sell to everybody, including Jews, non-kosher products.
Right.
But at home, he keeps kosher.
Right. That's exactly what I'm saying.
And you can eat at his home and accept a gift from his home.
Right, right.
All right, now here's my question.
Right.
How do you know you're sitting there in ancient Babylon one day, you open your mailbox, and there's a sausage, right, from,
right.
Well, I'm not going to use Sadia Kayon, Sadia the Moker, right? And how do you know whether he sent it to you from his home or his store?
That's a very good question. So the answer is you have to know the person personally. What kind of a person is he? And would he try to deceive you with a gift? I mean, what is his purpose? To make you eat trade for something like that? You understand? You have to know something about who it is, who is sending it to you. It's not something, that just comes in the mail.
He's got a store. He knows his customers.
Right.
People come in.
Didn't they always, referring to the...
He knows those who care and those who don't care.
He was the most honest guy in the... Because if he fooled around, everybody would be trading.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course.
So at some point, you have to trust somebody.
Yeah, a butcher has to be certified that he's kosher, correct. A sheikhet has to be certified that he is. You understand? And the same thing is true, even as far as dayonim are concerned, right? Dayon had to be a dayon mumcha. In other words, he had to be a judge who was certified that he knew his law and observed it, and so on and so forth. Right.
Now, if you have a certified butcher,
Yes, he should. He still needs.
Even though the butcher may be certified.
Right. I mean, you trust them, but still, the right thing is to have a mashgiach. Yeah. There's no question about it.
The old-time kosher butchers, they used to display their certification.
Yeah.
When you went into the shop, it was on the wall.
Right.
Particularly, I don't remember up here, but in New York, and in Israel, the shops were very careful.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, everybody is looking for the Teudah over there. Right.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. But today you have in Israel, you have people who sell your chazer meat too, unfortunately. They sold it to Jews.
Yeah. there in Malta, because a few years ago it was illegal when the religious parties had were part
it's
of
correct.
The well, I mean, not talking 30 years ago, about like
right.
six,
when,
7 years ago.
Yeah.
But
Pinky,
now went back.
When Pinky opened his school, it was a Black Angus in Monte Sharon.
Oh, yeah?
Black Angus restaurant.
Uh-huh.
I have no idea whether
it
was a kosher establishment or not.
Well,
it was called
the
Black Angus.
I mean, Black Angus is only the name of a certain type of an animal.
But they dealt with meat.
Right.
They dealt very heavily with meat. That's where his partner did him in.
Oh.
Bonnie was living there at the time, right down the street.
Uh-huh.
First time we were there, we saw him.
And unfortunately, he took his own life, from what I remember.
His partner did him in.
Wow. Wait, this was a restaurant, though.
He had a restaurant. He opened a restaurant. Went to Israel.
What years was that? There's a reason.
Well, 72.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Go ahead. Who's Pinky?
Horowitz.
Horowitz.
You remember he had the catering establishment?
He had Fort Pleasant.
Right.
In Fort Pleasant.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, he used to do quite a bit of catering over here in the shul.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He had a daughter, Roberta. Right.
In the 60s, Alan's Bar Mitzvah.
Yeah.
We had the bar mitzvah here,
right.
And walked there for the walk to Fort Pleasant.
From what I recall, Janie was the one who also was working for him for all those years, right?
That's a tragic thing. Was my mother involved?
He went down the time lights.
Okay. All right. Let's continue right now. Yes. So Bela Salkundris, as I said, this is a type of a soul. So they asked again, what's the my Bela Salkundris? Tell me, what is it? What kind of salt is this? It certainly wasn't kosher salt. Omar Rav Yehuda, so Rav Yehuda said, Omar Shmuel, the name is Shmuel, he said it, Melach Shekol Salkundre Rome Och. He says, this is a kind of orthodoxal, he says. This is a kind of salt that all the butchers, he said, all the bakers, Nachtonim is a baker, that all the bakers in Rome, they eat this. So the question is, so what's so bad about it? So Rashi explains, he says, it's prohibited. Mishum shema orin bo kirve dogim. You know what they do with this? They like to mix it together with dogim tamayim, with the innards of trefa fish. Yes, they figure it improves it or something like that, right? And the chasichas gedolos oisim imene. And then they take it and they make big slices out of it. So because of its contact with trefa fish, so this is the reason why that is prohibited. Okay? So
are we talking about chunks of salt? Chunks?
Yeah.
Chunks of salt.
Right.
Wait, I don't follow this. See, these are butchers? And they mix
Nachtom is bakers.
This is so
Right. Some say that stands for Alexandrian or something or other. I don't know. It's hard to figure out exactly
the
derivation. Yeah, and then Rashi says that these are bakers who like to mix fish with the salt. Trace of fish. Chaves. Apparently it was a Michael in Rome. What am I going to tell you?
So the salt was in contact with the fish, and that's what
right. Okay. So this is what Rashi explains anyway. Tana Rabbanan, so our sages thought, Melas Chalkundris Shechoyro Asura Levona Mutera. So this way, Rav Meir. Rav Meir makes a distinction between salt, which is white in appearance, and which is black in appearance. He says, the black is prohibited and the white is permissible. Okay? That's what Rabbi Meir says. Okay? Rabbi Yehuda However, disagrees with him, and he says, punkt verkehrt, he says, of Yehuda Eimer, he says, Levona Asura, the white salt is prohibited, and Shechora Muteris, and the black salt, he says, is permitted. Rabbi Yehuda ben Gamliel, Mishum Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, in the name of Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, Eimer, he says, Zu v'zu asura. They are both prohibited. Whether it's white or it's black, it's treif. Okay. Omer Rabbi Bar Chana, Rabbi Chana said, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, and he said the name of Rabbi Yochanan, he says, the Divrei HaOmer, the Vona Asura, says, in accordance with the opinion who says that the white salt is prohibited. So it's, the reason is kivei dogim levonim to make. Right.
Yes.
Rabbi Yochanan, you're right. Who says, you know, that according to the opinion, right, it's because they use the innards of white treifa fish mixed in with it. The Divrei HaOmer Shechayra Asura, and in accordance with the opinion of the one who says that the black salt, right, is prohibited, he has, because he says, Kirvei Dogim Shechayrim Tebeim Tumurim Dog. Right, the same thing, he says, only this is not white fish, but it's black fish. All right, and it's a tray for black fish, I'll mix it with that. Okay. And and then the opinion which says they both, whether it's white or black, it's prohibited. He says because zeb is zeb or rovinbo, they mix white treifa fish, black treifa fish, so it's prohibited. Okay. Omer Rabbi Abohu, Rabbi Abohu said, Mishum Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, in the name of Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, he said, Zokin Echod Hoya Bishkuna Seiru. Says, there was an elderly person in our neighborhood, because he means an elderly goy in this particular case, right? An idolater, right? Shehoya Machlik Podneho Bishum and Chazir, that he would take the salt and he would smear it with chazer fat, with lard. You understand? So that's another reason for prohibiting it. Whether it's fruit or fish. No, no, no. We're out of Syria. We're talking about this particular type of salt now.
Which is any place.
Any place, right. Yeah.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Right, because he says in Rome that this was a delicacy. Right. Okay. Right. Okay. Right. Hare Elo Asurim. So these are prohibited. So he says, the Miute Mai, what does it exclude? So he says, the Chizkiyah, in the case of Chizkiyah, the Miute Biyadua, says, if you know that somebody is treif, then in that case, don't use it. Rabbi Yochanan, the Miute Murias, in the case of Rabbi Yochanan, it excludes Murias and Givinas Besonyake, which we had several weeks ago, a type of cheese where we said also, in order to improve its flavor, what did they do? They smeared it with lard. Okay? Ustama Karabi Meir. And anything else would be following the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Okay? Right. And of course, yes. And again, this goes back to another problem that we had, namely, things that you could, you know, that you yourself are prohibited from eating, if you remember, right? And the question is whether you can derive benefit from it or not. But certain things you cannot derive benefit because they're so gewaltig, idolatrous, right? And other things, even though you're not allowed to eat, so you are permitted, however, to derive benefit from it. So we had various categories of these things.
But
all right.
Since the problem here was we discussed salt.
Right.
Was that the origin of why we had what they call kosher salt? I mean, at that point, there had to be salt that became, that was specifically marked.
Well, I'm not so sure that that's it. Right, correct.
Telling them they can't taste.
Correct. The reason with salt is I don't think that they began refining it so much until they started to make what they call table salt. Okay.
I'm thinking of the coarse
salt. Yeah, I know. The coarse salt was probably okay all along.
Yeah.
So that became known as kosher salt,
yeah.
The coarse salt, because when it comes to koshering an animal, you know, to remove the blood, then this is the kind of salt that you have to use, because it's not going to absorb, it'll draw out blood. Whereas if you would use table salt, the chances are it would be absorbed in, right. So that's why we have kosher salt, okay?
But the question that I'm having, if they had a problem with salt itself, it must have originated way back, that salt was something you had to be careful with.
Yeah, well, salt happened to be one thing. I mean, from time immemorial, people have been using salt for various reasons.
But one would have thought, what's the big deal with salt? Right. You know, you take a chunk, they chunked it, they,
Where did they get salt from in the Middle East?
In the Middle East? First of all, there were two sources. One was from the sea itself, and the other one that they have salt mines.
They have salt mines.
That's one of the chunks.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. They got it from the sea. That's interesting.
Right,
I never thought of that.
Dead seas have some
too. Yeah, but the kind of salt you have in the Dead Sea, I wouldn't recommend. The salt of the Dead Sea. Even though it's called, but even it's not called the Dead Sea, you know. What is it called? Yamanella. The salt. The salt.
Are they using that for de-icing?
Yeah, right, exactly. We're using it in order to melt the ice.
Poisonous.
Right, Ron Ekman does a good business with that.
Yeah. Yeah,
he gets it from the Yom HaMelech, right?
Yeah, I understand.
And
he sells salt that
comes from the Yom HaMelech.
Yeah.
And they use it in order to melt the ice and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he's been doing that for several years.
Yeah.
Oh, my, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Just to waste time, I was one night about a week ago, flipped on public television, and they had this, I don't know if you saw, they had this show about the Dead Sea. And it's amazing, they were showing that, well, one fellow had like a sort of like a tour boat, and they were trying to make a case about how strong because the Dead Sea is sort of drying up more and more now, how strong the salt is. They said that he left the boat, you know, for like 2 days or something in the water, and the entirety of the underside is encrusted with salt. I mean, like, you know, about half an inch thick, and it like can basically rot through the wood. I mean, it's amazing how corrosive it was.
Yeah, well, don't forget, it's not just plain salt. I mean, there's a lot of other things.
Yeah, I guess so. Right. I guess you're right.
Okay, now we come to the last Mishnah of this chapter, right? We're going down the home stretch over here, this chapter, right? It says, Ve'elu mutarin ba'achila, and these foods are permitted to eat. Number one, cholov shechalov ha'eret kolchovim yisrael ro'ehu, okay? Milk, where the goy milks it, but there's a Jew who standing over there to see that he's doing it, you know, that the animal kosher. This is called Cholav Yisrael. Right, that's Cholav Yisrael, okay?
Oh, all right.
Right.
They still had it that way.
Of course, absolutely. Right. Back in the old days, before you had dairies that did it, like Anne's father, Oliver Shalom, I mean, he would go, let's say, to the goy who was milking, and he would stand by over there, and that was Cholav Yisrael. And then, you know, eventually they did it on a commercial basis. You know. So, this is Chol of Israel. Okay. I don't have to tell you if it's a Jew who does the milking, it's also Chol of Israel.
Tell you.
Tell you, right. Absolutely, right. Or today in Israel, Tanuva, you know. Right. I mean, because you go to the farms, as long as they're Jewish farms, I don't have to tell you. So it's Chol of Israel. The only problem that you have is on Shabbos, the milking. That that milk has to be discarded. But otherwise, you can trust it, huh?
What about honey?
Well, that's the next item. The vash. The hadvash. The vash is hari, okay? Then the hadav devonios.
Yeah, but what about honey?
He says it's mutor. It's mutor. It's mutor. Mutor means it's permissible. This is how the Mishnah starts. The Mishnah says, and these are permissible.
You can buy honey from any, even an idolater, is permissible.
Okay.
And a Jew doesn't have to watch it.
Jew does not have to watch it. The only thing is, it should be pure honey and not something that has been, wherein they added other elements.
Obviously.
Like, for example, corn syrup in order to sell it cheaper or something like that. You understand? But if it's 100% pure honey, then technically it does not require a hefshel. Of course, if it has a hefshel, it's even nicer. You don't
so
have to
know
it.
You
right.
on 100% honey, sort of superfluous, over. Or is that just certifying that there was nothing else added?
Right.
Yeah. How about maple syrup? Is that like
that's a problem. It's a problem. Maple syrup by itself is kosher, but when the farmers process it, very often they put it into barrels with pork or something or other like that. Lard, whatever it is. It's supposed to improve the flavor.
No,
I don't know.
One of the largest...
Right. Absolutely not wrong. Absolutely not right.
Okay.
What's that?
Never mix... Maple syrup is made maple syrup. They boil it down and then it becomes thick and they sell it as 100% pure maple syrup. And that's where it is.
Well, as I said...
But there is an OU. Baskin. Baskin.
Baskin. Baskin.
B-A-S-C-O-M.
No, I'm not
well,
familiar with
farm.
That. Right.
Baskin. Eric Baskin used to be the reverend, the minister of here. It's probably knew him years ago. Anyway, his ancestral farm is still being run by cousins in the family or whatever.
Yeah.
But they concentrate a lot. They do a lot of. Maple syrup.
Yeah.
And he brought in little jars for everybody. It had an OU on it.
Oh.
An OU. Now, this is not a Jewish farm, obviously.
Yeah, but it's under supervision. It's under supervision.
The syrup had the OU.
That means that they were careful in how they processed it.
That's all. That's all they have.
Right.
Doctor, I have a different question, if I may. In the Torah, or maybe Rashi, he always takes pains to say debash is really date honey. Is that what kind of honey are they talking about here?
Here they are talking about the honey of bees. Okay.
Okay.
Talking about the honey of bees here. In the Torah, where they says, you know, where they call Eretz Yisrael a land of milk and honey, right? In reality, the honey probably refers to that of dates. How do we know?
I don't understand how you get honey out of dates.
The sweetness, the sweetness that comes out of it is like honey.
Really?
Yes.
Oh,
out of fresh dates. You have different kinds of dates. And it depends. If they're around a long time, they become like a piece of wood. You know.
But I haven't
right.
seen that.
Right.
They're fresh.
Right. They're fresh, right. Exactly.
Otherwise, they look dried out.
Have you ever had a really, really fresh, date where you can just touch it, a little moisture or something comes out of it? I think that's...
Probably have.
You know, when the Pasuk in the Torah speaks about, you know, Eretz Chitos, over a land, you know, wheat and barley, etc., etc., Eretz Zeshemen, right? A land where you have olive oil, meaning both the olive and the oil itself that comes out of it, with the vash. So there they explain that the vash doesn't mean honey, but you know, the commentary is that it's dates. So that's why we know that when you eat a date, you have to make a bracha. What? I mean, make bori priha weitz, right? And then what do we say after dates or figs or olives? We make a bracha, right? Al hoeitz, v'al pri hoeitz, v'al to do a sasoda, etc.
Like a burnt.
And if it's cake, for example, so you know, al hadichim, v'al kalkola, etc. If it's wine, then you have to say al hagef, v'al pri hagef, and you have to do a sasoda, etc. In other words, it's a longer. Exactly. Right. This is what we call the bracha. We learned it in Gemara when we studied brachas. It's be'ein shalosh, a bracha which has the essence of the first three brachas and the benching included in it. All right. Now the next one is Hadavdavonios afapisha. Menatfin, right? Emahem mishum hechsher mashke. Okay, so first of all, we have to define what a davdavonios. So according to Rashi, davdavonios, he says, these are eshkolos shel anovim, right? They are clusters of grapes, right? And what about these clusters? So he says, even though they may be dripping some liquid, the grapes themselves, so it says, nevertheless, the liquid does not render something tame. When it comes to foods become tame through some liquid. This is what we call hechsher. Hechsher means that the liquid prepares the food to become subject to the Hechsher here has nothing to do with making kosher.
Right.
It means, on the contrary, that what it does is that it makes it liable, prepares it for becoming tummy, the food itself, right? So, but it needs liquid in order to do it. Now, this liquid, which is dripping from the grapes, is not considered as, falling into this category. It's not like wine or blood or water and so on, I mean, which are liquids, you know, that predispose them. Okay?
Why does it refer to as honeycomb? So?
Rashi doesn't take it that way, but others, you know, who were looking at it, right, so they take a different interpretation as to what exactly it is, okay? That's the answer. Not anyone. If I would look at those words, you know what my first reaction
cherries.
Is?
Cherries.
Cherries?
Cherries. Right. Because Dudavan in the Hebrew is a cherry. And it looks a lot like this one.
Doesn't it? That's what I thought of.
Yeah,
was.
Right. But this is not what Rashi said.
Trees,
huh? Yeah. Let's say you get, you know, a group of cherries together and they start in, you know, they get wet. Okay? So this would be my first reaction. But as I say, that's not the way Rashi takes it. Rashi takes it as a cluster of grapes. Okay? Now the next thing is kvoshen. In dark, okay. Kvashim, as we learned, these are things that are preserved, right? So, when you make preserves, the question is, do you decide to make it taste even better by adding wine or vinegar to it? Then, in that particular case, you have your question, you know, whether it's, yainakim or something like that, you understand? So, therefore, if we know definitely that no wine or wine vinegar has been added to this type of food, then the presumption is that it's kosher. Okay?
preserves anything that you're trying to preserve? Or
yeah, right.
Do you preserve like fish with salt?
Maybe. Maybe. I mean, they don't specify what preserves. I mean, to me, if I think of preserves, I'm thinking about jam. Exactly. But I guess pickles also, I mean, could be preserved. But there, you know, the chances are that you're going to add vinegar to it. So you have to know, is the vinegar kosher or is the vinegar not kosher? What is that?
Vinegar
and
roots.
Chomets. Chomets. Chomets means that it's sour.
Oh, that's right.
Sour. Right.
So what we're saying is, though, that this, if it comes into
pickle,
contact...
I mean, a pickle, technically, you know, let's say a cute, you know, a sour pickle would be malafif on chomets. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
If any food that comes in contact with water or anything else that comes, it be prepared for tuma.
Yeah, but we don't observe these days,
particularly,
you know, tara and tuma.
Yeah.
If we had a base of mikdash, then we would have to bring all these things back together. The only ones who observe to a certain extent, a kohen is not allowed to, you know, to have to deal with a dead body, right?
Yeah.
Except the immediate family. Seriously. But otherwise, we don't particularly observe Tara and Tuma. Because how can we become cleansed from it?
But when this was written, there was no Beis HaMikdash. They were already gone. The Beis HaMikdash was gone, right?
The Beis HaMikdash may have been gone, but people were still trying to preserve it as if it still were in existence. What I spoke about last week about the Prushim, or as they refer to them over there, the Chaverim. In other words, they took an oath, you know, that they would continue to observe to eat food in Tahara, not in Tuma. So, they had to be very careful about it. Remember? Then we learned that the let's say the widow of a Chaver.
Yeah, right.
And so on, right. Yeah. Okay, well, let's finish the Mishnah. I think I'm going to call it a night because I'm very tired right now. Okay. The Taurus, She'eno Trufa. Taurus, as we said, this is a kind of a fish, remember? So, if it's not chopped up, literally minced, you know. So,
that particular.
It's a kind of a fish, right? So, it's. The reason that we learned already before is because. It resembles trefa fish also. So we want to make sure if it's not chopped up, then in that particular case we can recognize it. But if it is, then you know, then you can't eat it. The tsir, yes.
These are what is permitted.
Permitted, right. The sotoris, which is not chopped up. This is exactly what he says. Right.
They're not talking about kelpa fish yet.
Okay. That's made under rabbinical supervision.
Yes, okay.
Even if it's not a whole fish, but for example, a
slice of fish or something.
Let's say a piece of herring. Okay.
Piece
of herring, right.
You know what it looks like. You see the bone has a scale.
Right.
Skin.
Exactly. Okay. And yes, what's the next one over there? Yeah, the tzir sheyesh bo doga. If it's brine and it has a fish, we said a fish that they call the kilbis in it, then we know that it's kosher. Why? Because the kilbis cannot exist in brine, which is not kosher. Okay.
Oh, it didn't exist?
Kilbis.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can only exist in brine, which is kosher.
You mean alive or dead?
Presumably, it started off alive.
I know.
Yeah, no, that is a good question.
I have to assume it started off alive.
What?
I assume that it started off alive. Right? the Ola Shel Chiltis. Now remember, we've been talking about Chiltis, various men, this poor vegetable, you know, but so sharp and everything else. So he says, the leaf of the Chiltis you can eat.
The leaf?
The leaf, because why? Obviously, the leaf, you don't have to use a knife in order to get it. But what was the Yisr? The Yisr was that, you know, the Goy. By the way, we're talking about, you know, this is a leaf that you buy at the market and the Goy is selling it to you. You understand? Right. So, this is permitted. Okay. The Zeisei Gluskois Hamagul Golin. Okay. So, Zeisei, of course, these are, you know, olives, right? And as Rashi explains, it says, Zeisim Hakanusim Bikli Ogol. They take olives and they put them into a round kelim, right? Whatever. Okay. Well, mischamim in. And then what happens? The olives stuck together, so they begin to get warm. And as a result, they combine with each other so that it becomes like a cake. In other words, they,
they clump together.
They clump together, exactly. Right. And then he says, so Megugalin, he says, Kabo Megugeles, Shadishamamu Venirpu. And he says, the word Megugeles over here means that first it got warm and then it got soft, literally. Okay? Machmash Shamnon, because of their the oil in that. Alas, he says, Boulage, Boulage. Well, whatever that is, okay. All right.
Well, you're not your old French, is it?
All right, right. Well, I mean, Moul, you know, Moul means, Moul is a mold in French. Okay? Yeah. Right. In Paris, they told me that you can eat any French bread unless it is moulé. If they put it into a mold, then that you can't trust. Okay. But at Stam, you know, they put it into the oven and it comes out, so that would be okay. Yeah. Rabbi Yossi Omer, right? Shlochin Asurin. Rabbi Yossi says that Shlochim are prohibited. So, he comes back again to, according to Rashi, Azesim Kamahada. He gets back again to olives, right? And he says, later on, tomorrow we'll tell you why he says that these are prohibited. Okay. No, Mela, if we have the patience, we'll learn next week why. Okay. Achagovim, right? Grasshoppers, Aboyim and Haslula, if they come out of Rashi says Hadim Korim Basal, they're sold in a basket. The shopkeeper is selling them in a basket, right? So Asurin, they are prohibited. Zingor again, I mean, the reason is because the shopkeeper, in order to make it more attractive, he may put wine.
Make wine.
He may put wine.
A wine in
the
grasshoppers.
To the grasshoppers. Give it more flavor. Right. Exactly.
Well, good.
Right.
You don't want to try it out.
Right.
No,
right. But grasshoppers, he says, min haheftek mutor. If he gets it out of the storage room, where obviously in the storage he would not be adding any wine because it would spoil altogether, you understand? So if he comes it out of the storage, you know, and not from what he has on display in front of him, then in that case you could buy it. Okay. V'chein l'truma, and likewise in the case of truma. So the question is, what is this? I mean, obviously this has to do with what? With the kohen. And what is the problem? So we discover that the problem over there is that the Kohen may decide to do a little bit business. Understand?
Business.
Do some business.
Yeah.
And he'll decide, you know, that he'll sell you, who are an ordinary Joe, and you're not a Kohen.
Oh,
truma. Right. Because truma has to be only eaten by a Kohen, nobody else. Okay? And they have to be in a state of purity and everything else when they, you know.
So now they're impugning the
Kohen
that he's
going to
do something bad?
They're impugning that there are Kohanim who may be.
They sort of crept up on that. By the way, how else would you sell grasshoppers if you don't have them in a basket? I mean, they're hopping all over the place. How would you do this? I mean,
not exactly my Bible, that's all I can tell you.
That's the problem, we don't buy too many wet shoulders.
No wonder if they're
Okay, tonight is the 25th of January, the year 2006, and we are now continuing with the Gemara.
Where are we on the year?
On Daf Lamed Tes, Omet Beis, and we are approximately a quarter of the way up from the bottom.
Right, exactly.
Where?
About a quarter of a way up from the bottom.
Right.
We started even.
Right.
Yeah, we were past that gun.
Okay. All right. Right. Well, you see that Gimel Mem, that means that's the beginning of the Gemara discussion on the Mishnah. Okay?
How far down from there?
What do you mean? No, we're starting over there. Right, right. Yeah. What the Gemara is now going to do is to analyze the Mishnah, take it phrase by phrase, and, you know, try to explain it. Okay? So the very first thing that we had in the Mishnah was about milk. What did it say? It said the Eilu Mutorin Bachila, right? That's a general category. All these things that are mentioned in the Mishnah are permitted to be eaten. And the first thing that they mentioned is Cholov, milk, Shechalavoy Evet Koychovim. I'm quoting the Mishnah right now. Milk that the idolater had milked, or the Goy had milked, Yisrael Roeyu, and the Jew sees him. So this is now what they want to explain. So first of all, they draw a parallel. Okay, Tanina, we have learned, right, in this particular case, it means we've learned either in Tosefta, we've learned the Baraisa, let's call it Baraisa. We have learned the Baraisa, the Horda Tana Rabbanan, which is parallel to that which we have learned in our Mishnah. And what is this Baraisa? It says, Yoshev Yisrael Vitzat Edro Shel Oved Kechavim. The Jew sits next to the flock, the herd, right, of the Goy. The Oved Kechavim Choylevle. And the Goy milks it for him, or maybe low, and he brings it to him. And the Jew doesn't have to be worried as to whether it is kosher or not. So I don't have to tell you. I mean, this raises a question. We'll see in a moment what is the question. Okay? It says, how does it work out? He says, if the entire flock consists of kosher behemoths, right? Then pshita, in that case, it's obvious that it's kosher. That is, that the milk itself is kosher.
Right, obviously.
You know, I mean, remember that they could get milk not just from cows, but they could get milk from goats, presumably from sheep also.
Well,
okay? Goats and sheep, right. Yeah, so they're all kosher, and the milk would be. What would be treif? Right. From the camel would already be treif, from a horse, a mare, you know, would be treif. I mean, that's the point.
A
pig would also be treif. So, saying, I mean, if the herd consists only of kosher animals, then pshita, then it's obvious that it's kosher.
Right.
The edi could have a tov maybe a draw, but if there is an animal which is not a kosher animal in the flock, amai, right? Then how can you make a blanket statement that it's okay? Which is what the Mishnah said, correct? So he says the Olam, he says, Takya, he says, the Iko Dovatome. Yeah, we're talking about a flock which does contain an unkosher animal. But the question is, how can we say that it's kosher? So he says, V'chi kai chozil. If the Jew stands, he can see what's going on. Right? The Jew can see what's going on. What the goy is milking over there. Okay? V'chi yasiv. But if he sits, lay chozil, right? He can't see what's going on over there. Because obviously, let's say there are a lot of animals around and they're blocking the view. Okay? So, how then can the Mishnah say that it's kosher? He says, Mahu the Tamar. What if you say that Kevin the Yosef Le Chosevle, if the Jew is only sitting over there and he can't see what's doing, right? Then Nichesh Dilma Maise Moribe, then shouldn't we be concerned that the Goy will go and mix the milk from a trefa animal with the milk of, a kosher animal? So they say, Kabash Balon. This is why we learn that Kevon de Chikai, that inasmuch as the Jew can stand up at any minute, right? And Chazile, right? And he can see what's going on. So, in that particular case, here to say miltus, that the goy will be afraid because he figures that the Jew at any moment will stand up and see what he's doing, and therefore the goy veloma orefe, the goy is not going to mix the milk of the trefa animal with the milk of the kosher animal. Okay.
It doesn't say that the Jew the Israelite is standing. Sitting in the area.
No.
Doesn't it actually say he sees him?
What they're
implying
is that they're implying that he can see what's going on.
So,
whether he's standing or sitting, it doesn't make any difference really.
Right.
He has to see what's going on.
Yeah,
that's
correct.
That's the important thing.
Right.
Yeah.
The Mishnah stresses the seeing out of right. Here the question is, he see? How can he see? But as much as he can stand up at any minute, so the goy is not going to take a chance.
The whole point
right.
Is that he could see. Right.
Right. Yeah.
I have another question in passing. It's not really important, but the word
Pshita. Pshita, right. Pshita. It's obvious. It's like Pashat.
Like
Pashat.
Pashat.
Right.
I was thinking of the word Pshat.
Yeah, pshat is also related to it. The pshat is the literal meaning, right? The plain meaning. Exactly. That's what pshat means. Exactly. Right. Right. Everything. Look. Right. Yeah, pshat is Aramaic, but obviously you can see how it's related to the Hebrew as well.
How did you know it was Aramaic?
No, the whole thing is not. It's a mixture. What we read is actually is Aramaic. You're right about that.
The Mishnah part is Aramaic.
The Mishnah, no. The Mishnah is written in Hebrew.
Yeah.
But the Gemara, inasmuch as it represents the arguments back and forth of the various rabbis about the Mishnah, yeah. So most of the Gemara is in Aramaic.
So what we've been reading now, all of this is actually Aramaic and not...
Yeah, but the last sentences that we were reading, it's all Aramaic.
There's so much that's recognizable.
Well,
yeah.
Right,
so
right.
So much is recognizable.
Right, yeah.
All right.
But occasionally there are words that don't look like their Hebrew right. counterpart. Okay. Next thing is davash, hadvash, honey. Okay, remember we discussed it last week too. So he says, Davash, honey, the my nichishlo. What should we be suspicious when it comes to honey? He says, Imishem Eruvay, this was sorry, he says, if we're afraid that he's going to add some wine to it, it's going to spoil the taste of the honey.
Of course.
Imishem Bishulayev de Kechovim, if our fear is the fact that, let's say, the goy cooked the honey. So, in that particular case, we come back to something else that we learned, namely, that if it's ne'achal kibosha hu chai, namely, it can be eaten raw, it doesn't have to be eaten only cooked, understand? Then in that case, we said, we don't worry about that. This is why, for example, with vegetables, you know, it's not such a great concern, although I have to tell you, there are many who feel that in the case of, canned vegetables, since they cook them, so you have to know, how were they cooked? Were they cooked in, you know, the same type of machinery that cooks trefer stuff or not? So that's the reason why we should really be careful and look for a hefsher on
frozen.
There, if is 100% plain. I mean, in other words, only green peas, only peas or whatever it may be, corn, you know, and no sauce has been added to it.
Salt wouldn't, Well, the Pesach must have had the salt added.
If it's fresh frozen, I don't know that they need salt in it. I don't think so.
What's that?
Because
some of them put salt in.
As far as I know, doctors recommend, you know, if you're on a low salt diet, that they do recommend frozen vegetables. Right. Because when it comes to cans, there's more of a tendency to put in salt. I know I can't eat any of the canned soups. They're too high in sodium.
Oh, that's that a long time ago.
Right.
Years ago, when Harry was alive.
So on this principle that if you can eat it raw, then in that particular case, you don't have to worry about whether it's kosher or not. All right. Now, e mishum gi ulei. This introduces another problem. It's cooked in a pot. Okay? What if the pot had been used for something treif, right? And even though the pot is clean, but we're worried, you know, that there's still something within the pot itself. This is why, you know, pot becomes treif. What do you have to do? You have to boil it out. That's called hagola, okay? So, should be worried about, in this particular case, that the pot, which had, obviously, it was a clean pot, but still, if you're worried about it, so, he says in that particular case, nesin tam nifgamhu. It would spoil the taste if really there was anything in there and it went into the honey. It would spoil the taste of the honey. And what did we learn? That the days in Tamn have gone, right? In that particular case, mutar, it's permissible to eat it. Remember we talked about the difference between if it improves the taste, days in Tamn shevach, it's also, but if it spoils the taste, then in that case, it's mutar. Permissible. Then the next thing was this, the Havdil Devonius. Okay? The Havdil Devonius, remember these were the clusters of grapes that we had? That we said, you know, some liquid was being exuded from them. Okay? Naturally, what are we worried about? Worried about whether it turned into wine.
Yeah,
grape juice, wine, or something like that. So, question is, why did we say that it's permissible, right? And not only that, we also said that they do not serve as a hechsher, in other words, to prepare the food for becoming tamei. That's what the Mishnah said, okay?
All right,
so, analyzing this, okay. We have the one is afal pishem and not face behem mishum hershem ashke, right? So raminu. So we ask a question on that because we have a contrary statement. What's the contrary statement? Obviously, again, it's a Gemara. It happens to be a Gemara in the Chul. Okay, and it says, aboitzer the gas. If somebody is pressing out, he takes the clusters, he harvests grapes, okay? And he's doing it for the Gus. The Gus is the place where, you know, they tread upon the grapes in order to crush them.
Press.
Right.
It's wine press.
Okay. Right. Okay.
Just from that Yankee song?
Huh?
The Civil War song. Treading upon the grapes. Grapes around.
Oh, yeah. Okay, right. Glory, hallelujah. Yeah.
That was a Civil War song.
Right. Okay. So, if this is the purpose of the grapes, then what? Shammai says that in that particular case, the grapes already, the liquid that is formed can become tame, right? And Hillel omer lehushar. And Hillel says that the liquid, you know, from the grapes, it does not predispose it to becoming tame. But then it says, "Ve'odelei Hillel Shammai," and then it says that Hillel came around to agree with Shammai. So, if that's the case, it certainly is a contradiction to the Mishnah, which said that it does not cause it to become, you know, to prepare it to become tummy. You understand?
Yes.
Now, so how do we get around that one? So it says, "Hosam." In the case of this last Gemara that we cited, talking about somebody who takes the grapes because he wants to press them out and make wine out of them, what is his